This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
Hey guys, last year was a wild year for censorship for hunters and anglers. We partnered with the social media platform Go Wild to combat mainstream social media censorship. Go Wild was built by outdoorsmen and women and by hunters and anglers just like you. Go Wild is a free social community. Not only are your photos not censored, they're encouraged on Go Wild. Go Wild gives you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. And as you earn points, you start to unlock awesome rewards too, such as gift cards, free stuff, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Oh, and if you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. Visit downloadgowild.com to get started. The Southern Ground Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Spartan Forge. It's forged in combat and tailored for hunters. Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products that save the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You can start your free 14-day trial today by visiting spartanforge.ai, and you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND, that's all lowercase, all one word, SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout, and that'll get you 25% off of your purchase. If you're wanting to know more about saddle hunting, well, check out tetherednation.com for all your saddle hunting needs. Tethered is for saddle hunters by saddle hunters, and they're redefining ultralight hunting. If you'd like to support the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, you can visit patreon.com/Southern Ground Hunting, or you can click on the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. We offer two different tiers for our patrons that offer a solid list of benefits. We'd love for you to join the Southern Ground Hunting community today. Again, that's patreon.com/Southern Ground Hunting. And now, let's get to the show. All right, guys. Super jacked about this episode because there's a couple different things. Our guest, Jordan Pope, is going to be on with us today. And like this dude, he's been on. Jordan, I'm talking like you're not even right here. Is this the third time that you've been on or fourth?
I think it's three.
This is the third? So,
yes.
Talking about turkeys, talking about deer. This episode is going to be a deer episode, but I am really struggling to keep my train of thought on deer because all I'm thinking about is turkeys right now. So, but we are going to talk about deer. It's going to be a really fun episode, good conversation about just precision in deer hunting and being, even if you don't have a lot of time to hunt, even if you don't have a lot of hours to put into it because of whatever your circumstance is, being very precise on those times you do get to hunt. So that's going to be a really cool episode. But this is also, so we're kind of changing up how we do Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. And I've got a group of guys that have all been guests on the podcast before and or have helped me co-host at a time whenever maybe Drew wasn't available or whatever. But Drew's not going anywhere. He's actually supposed to be on with us today, and he may end up coming and jumping on the call at some point. If that happens, it might be a little bit awkward, of an awkward pause or silence or something like that, but we'll make it work. So Drew's not going anywhere, but we're going to add a few more guys to the team to help co-host the podcast. Yeah. My desire has always been to make a podcast and create a podcast that is just as good without a guest as it is with a guest. And it's hard to do that whenever you've got just one or two guys that are hosting. So I've brought in some guys who are very familiar to the show, and one of them is joining us today on his debut as a Southern Ground Hunting co-host, Mr. Matthew Reeves. Matt. Matthias?
Call me whatever, man. I've been called worse.
So Matt's going to help us co-host. I'm super excited about this, dude. Like, absolutely jacked. You were one of the first people that I thought about. And I know you got your own thing going on as far as YouTube and content creation is concerned. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of where you're at with your own brand.
Yeah, well, first off, Parker, thank you for, you know, giving me this opportunity to come on here and talk. Always like to get on here and talk deer hunting, like you said, whether it be a guest or just us talking. We're going to make this fun and entertaining for everybody that's listening. But yeah, for the past, I guess, 3 years, I've been running a page called Southern Pursuit. Do YouTube, Instagram, public land hunting, private hunting, woodsmanship stuff, you name it. I try to cover it. But that's, you know, that's something I do for fun, but I really just like coming together with my buddies and hunting. And that's really my goal is, you know, to not just be a single hunter, but kind of hunting as a group and rather see other people be more successful than myself.
Man. And going back to what I said about making a podcast that's just as good without a guest as it is with a guest. My favorite podcast to listen to, and also some of my favorite podcasts to just do as we create different shows, are the ones that are just like last week I named the episode Fireside Chat. Adam Cruz was on there, whatever. I love that like deer camp type environment, you know, and obviously we're all sitting here on a Zoom call, so we're not sitting around a campfire, but it is fun to like reminisce on past stories and things like that. And so what we try to do is think of the best, most diverse group of guys who are not only great deer hunters, but good communicators and just fun, just people that I would go hunt with in any given scenario. And so we've got a few more that we'll be introducing through the next few weeks. But Matt, you're the one that's here today. So thanks a lot, man. I'm super excited about you being here.
And if y'all haven't already, go back and listen to last week's episode. I listened to it. I think it was Monday. Listened to it. It was very encouraging for me. Just as deer season's winding down, to kind of keep that fire going for next season, start planning those trips, getting ready, and be ready to make those stories again that you get to talk about when the season's over. So that was really, really awesome to hear from Parker and everybody else. So if y'all haven't, go tune into that.
Yeah, man, that was a fun episode. I love those type of episodes. Today, though, is really not going to be a whole lot different because Jordan is not a new guy on the show. You've been on here a whole lot, Jordan, and very consistent with, both deer and turkeys. You seem to be very consistent. I know if I had to guess, I would say the fire's under you a little bit more when it comes to turkeys. Would that be right?
Yeah.
Would I be correct in that assessment?
Yeah.
But, I mean, dude, you're killing some great deer. And I talk to you all the time. We're buddies. You know, you're not just a guest on the show or something like that. So I think this is going to be another good fireside chat type episode. But I do have an agenda, right? I sound like a Democrat. I do have an agenda with this because you recently, this past weekend, had a pretty stellar hunt. So, Jordan, before we get into that hunt, really, kind of tell us, for anybody who doesn't know you and hasn't maybe listened to the past episodes that you've been on, tell us a little bit about who you are, kind of your lifestyle, what you do for a living and things like that, because I think that'll set up, like your season in life, that'll set up for a lot of what the show is going to be about today.
Well, to start off, my name's Kalen Pope. I'm a plumber, but I'm an apprentice plumber, so that requires me to go to school several nights a week. During this recent part of deer season, it was four nights a week for 4 hours a night, so I would work out of town about an hour away all day, come home, and then go straight to school. And then my daughter was also born right in the middle of the rut, so throw that in the mix as well. Just as far as my lifestyle, man, I really just kind of push myself as far as hunting goes to be consistent. I kind of kill myself in the woods more than what I think most people do, to the point that, you know, a lot of people are pushing themselves to have as much fun as they can. And I just like that chess match with the animal, and I push myself for it.
You're a turkey hunter. I mean, you're a turkey hunter, so you enjoy that chess match. A lot of guys, in my opinion, there's not a whole lot of legal wrong ways to do it. But you enjoy that chess match and finding a certain deer and figuring him out. Just the same way as with a goblin turkey. Like, you like that battle, you know, between that bird that's goblin and you. Like, I get that. Like, that's – and sometimes it – like, you'd be hard-pressed to put a goblin turkey in front of me somewhere that I can hear that's within earshot that I'm not going to try to go after. I don't care what's in my way. If he's goblin, I'm going to try to find him. You know, I'm going to go after him. And
one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly. And so, in the same way, deer can be very similar, except for they don't gobble. If they gobbled, man, it would be a life would be different for sure. But
be a hard
but deer is in some ways it's so much harder, because you could be hunting a specific bedding area or something like that for a certain deer and have no idea if he's even there or not. You could just be sitting there wasting all your time because he's not making a noise. You know, it's very hard unless you have some type of technology through cell cameras or something like that, which is what we're going to talk about a little bit today, to know if a deer is even in that area. And so you've got to be very precise, very very persistent, willing to go the extra mile, sometimes literally the extra mile, the extra ridge to make it happen. So tell us, Jordan, tell me a little bit about your season this year and kind of how that look for you.
Man, you want to talk about the grindiest season I've ever had.
I like that.
I had a phenomenal bow season just for seeing. I saw one of my hit listers and then a random really big deer. I mean, equally as big as the deer I killed during bow season. And I was like, man, I'm just on it this year. Like, I just felt it, felt great. We step into pre-rut, dude, and I am further away from killing a deer than I have ever. It was like I couldn't make a right decision. I was struggling to see deer at that point. And I just kept pushing. And then, you know, obviously my daughter was born and it slowed up, you know, but my wife worked with me. I mean, she's a saint. There were obviously some days that I had to stay at home and help out a little bit. But it seemed like leading into January, my luck kind of started to change a little bit. It just seemed like the deer were kind of moving better for me in my eyes. Because obviously, you know, you look at social media and you're like, dude, I'm struggling. People are nailing them. And it can be discouraging. So you're like, oh.
Messes with you bad.
Yes. And so I ended up bow hunting a place and I had a really good deer. Would have been top three deer for me. Step out at 40 and there we had a camera on the scrape. And I thought that scrape was at 20 yards. I set up in a really crazy tree that day. It took me like 40 minutes to get up it. Everything was perfect. It was 19 degrees. I thought he was going to turn and hit the scrape. Well, he did it and he stayed it was like a planted section of trees that were really close together, though. I picked a shot at 40 and I sent it and he ducked it. I mean, the shot was perfect. So like even that added on to it. I was like, man, I just cannot catch a break this year. So in a nutshell, you know, until I explained to a lot of people in Alabama deer hunting, it's like they're a mythical creature. And until it happens, you don't even know they exist.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and to further that point, three of the probably the they've been doing it the longest, and they're very consistent. They're very good deer hunters. Mike Perry, Wes Moyer, Jamie McKay, those three guys. I got them all on a podcast this summer, and one of the questions I asked them, all three of them, I said, "How?" And you would look at these guys' stats. You'd look at the deer on their wall. You'd be like, man, these dudes, they must be seeing big bucks all the time. And I asked them, I said, so realistically, how many opportunities are you getting at a big buck every year? And all of them were like one or two, you know, like not a lot of opportunity. And so, you know, I kind of drive this into the ground. Alabama has a solid deer population, fairly good deer density compared to the rest of the United States, but there's so many places for those deer to hide, and that they have all kind of places that they can go, and you may never see them in there. And yes. And so what you're saying, a lot of guys, a guy living in Illinois might listen to this and be like, you thought you were on top of the world because you saw two big bucks during bow season? Well, freak yeah, I do, you know, because that doesn't happen. Do you think they're mythical creatures like you said?
Yeah, it's definitely a struggle bus here. And one of my best friends, actually, he has two leases in Illinois, and he just won't hunt Alabama. He's like, man, he said, I can't get out of bed for it. I mean, and I'm headed up this year, so I'm like, please don't ruin like my mentality.
It won't.
It's different.
I know a few people, actually. I say it won't. I know a few people who it has ruined how they hunt. Like, they'll put all their energy into focusing on a week that they get to hunt a Midwestern state, and they'll not do anything in their home, whether it's Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, whatever. But I think for guys like you who enjoy that challenge, that chess match, I don't think it'll ruin you, because that's, to me, that's part of the fun. And when you're getting to live on a high right now, last year you came on around the same time last year, because you had just killed two great bucks really close together. Now, they weren't nearly the caliber of deer that you killed this year, but I mean, two very, very nice bucks. And then you're living off this high right now of being able to kill this one that you killed that we haven't really talked about a whole lot, but you know that feeling, and it's hard to replace that feeling. It's hard to replicate that feeling when you go to somewhere like Illinois, where a lot of people are killing deer like what you killed. You yes. got, you know, like Like, I'm not taking away from what they do. I mean, that's still freaking cool, and that's awesome. But there's very few people here that are doing, like, you got I'm not going to say it's a once in a lifetime experience, but you got a very cool feeling from being able to kill that caliber of deer here. So I don't think it'll replace it for you. I really don't. But I kind of spoiled it a little bit, but you had a tough season, had a baby, right? Couldn't hunt a lot. You work, go to school, all this junk that kind of compiles on. It's like, when the heck am I going to get to go into the woods? But you did have eyes in the woods. So let's talk a little bit about this.
Okay, so we'll start at the very, very beginning. We'll start in 2019. So this deer is, for this particular area, is one of the largest deer using it. And I know that for just a fact. I mean, people talk. And so there were probably 7 or 8 people that had pictures of this deer and were actively hunting them the first 2 years that I knew about this deer. So I had pictures, and I saw pictures through people as well, but I didn't even invest any time. I was like, man, we're talking about what is possibly a deer that may be popping into public off private every once in a while, giving somebody a sneak peek, because every picture was either nighttime or it was daylight and velvet. So I just wasn't sure. Like, I wasn't going to commit or anything like that. I was just being mobile and getting on deer that way. All right, so we fast forward to 2020 last year. A picture gets sent out of that deer, and supposedly a guy had shot him off of the road out of his truck in a cutover riding down the road, and they tracked the deer for like 3 days, never found him. So in my mind, a light went off, like in the middle of the summer. I was like, man, everybody thinks this deer's dead. If this deer is alive, I'm going to go find him. Because from the start, I had a semi-general area. We're talking about maybe like 4 square miles. So it wasn't that I went out and just found this deer automatically on my own. I knew there was a deer somewhere of that caliber in that area. All right, so I get into it. I hang cameras this summer, and about 2 weeks in, boom, there he is. And I'm immediately like kind of in shock, and he doesn't look injured at all. So I was like, man, this is tight lip situation right here. Like, all year, this is tight lip.
Don't tell us all. Like,
you know? And so I started moving, and I missed a lot. Like, if you look at the way a lot of the pictures lay out, it would almost seem like, you know, I flooded the place with cameras. I ran about, it was like 5 cell cams, 2 regular cams, maybe 3 regular cams. And they got moved pretty often. And to tell you how smart this deer was, on one of the places that I got him daylight the most, when I originally moved that camera there, there was a camera pretty close to there. The deer quit showing up for like 3 weeks. And I went in right before it rained, tried to wash my scent out and everything, because I was pretty sure of what I was doing. So he like kind of ghosted, and I was like, man, this deer's touchy. I knew it like immediately. Well, it goes on, and I'm like laying in bed every night looking at maps, just pulling Onyx up and trying to block it out. I'm like, how much is he using? Like, where could he be coming from? Yada yada yada. I'm taking into account direction and wind, and I'm trying to lay all this out. And to be honest, there really wasn't any correspondence. What I came to the conclusion of that this deer was doing, he would daylight during the middle of the week, when road traffic was low, and on the weekends he would not show up till around midnight on that camera I was getting him on the most originally.
And what time of the season, what time of the year was this?
We're talking getting into late October, November. So like initially there were some velvet pictures, and then, you know, I started popping cameras in trying to figure out his travel routes. And there were several cameras in that time, like 2 or 3, where I got like 1 picture. So he would use that travel route, and consistently through the season, there was one travel route he only used at like 1 a.m., like once every 2 weeks. So like, you're just like, why, you know? And the only thing I can think is it getting towards that time of year, he trying to lay down sign and maybe start checking doe populations. Where are they? You know, where am I going to lay my route at to when I get going? So we start moving in to pre-rut. Well, at this point, I have a lot of cameras up. And during the summer, he had used one bed pretty consistently, like in August, and he completely abandoned that bed going into pre-rut. And the other camera that I had, the first shed, right after he shed that he popped up on, he was showing up there consistently. And I'm talking about like right before daylight, right after dark, like 2-3 times a week. So I was like, man, he's bedding like 200 yards, like somewhere right there. All right. So at that point, I'm trying to decide, do I go in and try to kill the steer with a bow if he will give me the chance? And I'm fighting with myself. And he daylights. And I was like, man, I got to do it. I got to go in and hunt him with a bow. I've got to try. So I went in and I got a really good look. You know, you see stuff in the summer and like your hanging cams, you're kind of looking for different things, just deer sign. Once I got in there, I realized it was an absolute thermal nightmare. Like everything started like clicking together. It was basically a thermal hub at the mouth of a ridge top with a cutover, a super short cutover all surrounding it. So he was bedding in like short pine cutover. And the trees you could get in, he was going to skyline me like before he even stepped out. So I knew then, I was like, man, I'm really wasting my time. You know, this deer, and I was giving the deer so much credit. I was like, this is why he's so old. I mean, anybody that's entered this area, I mean, he just automatically knows. So we pushed forward a little bit and he daylighted another day and rifle was in.
Before you move on, I want to know what you did that day. Did you just back out completely or did you hunt somewhere?
No, I hunted and I tried to throw my wind out of the hub. And I wasn't exactly sure where his bed was in the cutover, but I really think that deer watched me walk in. Light, no light, anything. I think that deer, because there's a gate and you kind of have to drop down it, turn to the right, and then come back from the direction you came. And I think he was literally watching the gate and he saw my truck pull up.
Yeah.
Any day that I hunted him in that general area, he did not show up till midnight that night, if he showed up.
Yeah, he just knew.
Yeah. I mean, he had it so down pat because of being hunted in that area. And he would move in between like private and publics at certain time because the block I was hunting had private on three sides. And one of the privates is not huntable. The guy will not give permission. And it was just one of those situations. He had a safe haven. So we get into December, he daylights. It's gun season. I was like, I'm going to make a move. I tried to come in a different way. And we're talking about like, we're pushing 2.5 miles in. I get about 3/4 mile in and bump him on the trail I'm walking on. Bump right off of it. Cause it was like gray light. I was running late and he was bedded on it. So I immediately shift. There was another deer in that general vicinity that I could walk like another mile and possibly hunt. So I drop down to this bottom and I head that way. It's getting like really gray light by the time I get there, like starting to really get up. And I'm arguing with myself. I'm like, should I try to get in a tree or do I need to just sit in this bottom and wait? And I was arguing with myself, and I really didn't like the situation I was in. I was like, man, I need to get in a tree. I took one step, and that other deer was coming down in the hollow with me and saw me. I'm talking about a very large deer, like bigger than the deer I killed last year. So two in one day, I was just like, here it was, you know.
And was this on that rifle weekend that you were talking about?
Or yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Still right. So by the time I realized he saw me, there was no getting my gun up. Like he was at the top of the ridge on the edge of a cutover. And as soon as I stepped, he turned and ran into the cutover. And I was like, great. Great. I'm just educated both of these deer, you know, that I'm here.
I have those moments, man. I had one in North Dakota. I always feel like I do this is when I know there's a good deer in there. And I try to get aggressive. I try to get super aggressive because I know he's there. In North Dakota, for example, it happened. I bumped a big deer off of a bed and that afternoon went back and hunted him later that afternoon. And as soon as my foot hit the leaves inside the wood line, he got up and ran off. And it's like, It's like one of those things, man. It's like sometimes I just wish I wouldn't know if he was there or not, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think it does help you in the long run with what you're talking about. And I do want to say this too, as we're talking about this, Jordan, me and you, we have a lot of similarities in the style that we hunt. I think Matt is the same way. But you and Matt really align more in the realm of trail cameras, and I don't use any of them. And y'all are using, I have a internal argument going on with myself about cell cameras specifically. I'm not against them. I enjoy this element of surprise, but I want to find this balance in here. So, as we talk, I want people to understand that I like, I think everything's a progression, right? You progress, you should be trying to progress in any way possible. As I hear people like you, Jordan, talk about using cell cameras and the term daylighting and all this stuff, it's so completely different from the style of hunting that I'm used to. But it's legal. I don't necessarily think it's unfair, and it fits what you're doing. So like I've had conversations on other podcasts recently where I've said, you know, I don't do it because I just don't do it. You know, I like the element of surprise and stuff like that, but I am very curious on how you're doing this too. So we're going to get into that here in just a second, but go ahead and continue that story. But I just kind of wanted to put that little, you know, precursor in there. Like I'm interested. I'm cautious. I'm not sold one way or the other, you know what I mean?
And this is in a short summary to lead up to what you were talking about, or to not necessarily rebuttal as an argue, because I completely agree with you. One of my best friends, there were only a couple of people that knew really what was going on with the deer, and they hunt other places. And there was several times we talked about, am I hurting myself more than I'm helping? Because this is actually the first year that I've ran them this heavy. Because my buddy was like, dude, how do you know you're exactly on an exit that he's using? How do you know that he's not moving every single day and you're getting him at dark? How do you know? Are you spending time elsewhere when you could have already killed this deer? Whereas you probably would have went and hunted anyway.
Yeah. And maybe I would have killed him because he was just going right behind the camera, whatever. And maybe I would have just blown him out of there forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you just that this is that. Go ahead. That's exactly where I'm at.
So, anyway, continuing on, I bumped both the deer, and I was like, man, I was pretty down on myself. And it actually turned out that the next day, I stopped getting any type of picture on any trail, any bed, anything. And I was pretty confident in the way that I had set up the cameras and moved them because of the way that he was moving. The deer didn't really leave. He left two rubs in a 600-acre area that I knew where it is because of the size of them, height-wise. And just, I mean, you can't tell what deer is making what scrape. I mean, some people, I guess, maybe think they can. But so I was kind of like, you know, I was pretty sure where he was. If he was going to move, I would have. But that's just me being confident in myself. In reality, I could have been totally off and got completely lucky. But anyway, continuing on, he disappeared. And this is like end of December. I'm messing up a little bit. My daughter's born. We go to the hospital. It's December 27th. And there was a spot there where he didn't really show up. I mean, we're talking about like 3-4 days leading up. And because I was really trying to push before my daughter was born to kill the deer. Because I was like, I need to get this done. Like, I was actually like mentally hurting myself and my decisions because I was pushing myself. And my daughter's coming, like everything's going on. And my wife is actually like dilating, and it's like 8 o'clock in the morning. And boom, there he is, broad daylight. And I turned the phone and showed her.
And push, like, baby, push.
But hold on, I got to show you something.
Yeah. It's like literally really right now, like of all time, like, can you not, can you not? And so I had to have a mental conversation because I'm hyper obsessive. So like I had an internal battle with myself as far as being a responsible adult and a parent to not try to get up and go hunt that deer. So I just had to mentally give up for the year right then. Like I was like, whatever happens, it's out of my control at this point. I gave it my best, and that's all I could do.
You always hear people talk about how those big mature bucks are, those big old mature bucks are, they're just smarter, man. They just know. They're just smarter. What we didn't know is that this specific deer went out and got a Facebook profile and was keeping tabs on your life, and he was keeping tabs on you, knew that your daughter was being born, so he just decided he's going to move around that day.
Had free reign.
It's interesting because one thing I forgot to mention is there was a guy hunting pretty close to this deer. I don't think I had a camera set up on that on the way in because I wanted to actually see who was heading towards where the deer's what I considered his core was. So I knew there was a guy in the vicinity, but he wasn't getting close enough. But he literally hunted every single day of bow season. And then like the first 3 weeks of rifle, he was there every day. So I don't know. I never saw him. I ended up walking in the gate because I knew he wasn't hunting the same area. I ended up walking in the gate one time when he was there. And I was planning on like speaking to him and being like, hey man, like this is kind of what's going on. Like, are you seeing this deer or anything? But I never got the opportunity. I still to this day don't know who he is, but I am 100% sure he was in there hunting because he had a picture of that deer.
Sure. If he was hunting it every day, man. I mean,
yeah. I mean, he was
wearing it out.
Where we're from, I mean, a deer like this is a, I mean, you're talking, you know, this is as good as it gets up here. I mean, and that's just the reality of it. I mean, you might get, you know, a 160 every once in a while, but I mean, this is what you're after. Well, so my daughter's being born, and the next day, my wife actually labored for 18 hours. So like we're awake, it's long. And then like the 18th hour, they decide to have a C-section. And I was like, so it's like worst case scenario, dude. At like this point, like I'm so nervous. They go in to give the C-section. They like sit me down in the hallway. Like I'm like out of it. I'm just like, this is beyond me. Like what I'm mentally able to do this moment. And they walk me in the room and like, they were like, hey, man, you got to walk over there and sit down. Like, I walked in. I was just, like, looking around like a deer in headlights. I was like, whoa. Like, what's happening right now? So my daughter's born, and, like, I'm smitten. I mean, everything's awesome. The next morning comes, and boom, he daylights again. And I was like, man. Like, immediately, like, my internals, like, switch again. And I'm like, I gotta go. But I knew I couldn't. And that proceeded to happen for the next 3 days after that. So another mental defeat in my mind, I was like, that was my window. I mean, when you're talking about a deer of this age class, like how many does he give? I mean, that's it.
Did your wife know this like mental struggle that you were having, or were you just keeping it all to yourself?
I'm sure she knows me so well. So I'm sure she was like, you know, this idiot is like literally having like a mental struggle over a deer.
I feel you, Jordan. I'd be the same way. Just want to crawl up in a ball and just lay there. Because he said his time's limited on how many times he's going to daylight and when's he going to go back in that little hole again.
And that was one of the reasons I started this. So like I said, I've ran trail cameras before. But it was only to get like a generalization of what was in the area and like, you know, kind of like see, like checking like some hubs and like some ridge lines and stuff like that, just to see if there were good deer in the area consistently. I've never targeted a deer. And in my mind, when you're talking about the elite of the elite whitetail hunters that have done this for years, I mean, most of them are in the Midwest, but it's surgical removal. They go in to kill one deer. They wait till the time to dry, they hit it, and they kill them. And, like, so in my mind, like, I knew I was taking on a task. I was like, a lot of times I was like, this is above me. And I even had a conversation with three of my best friends. I was like, I'm just not good enough. I mean, it's that simple. Like, this deer is smarter than I am as far as, like, I mean, I'm in his world. So after he daylighted like that, he actually did disappear. And it was crazy because I got COVID like right after my daughter was born. And dude, I felt horrible. Like a lot of people I know were like, yeah, man, I hunted all week. Like it was awesome. And like, dude, I felt terrible. Like I'm sitting there thinking like, now's my chance, dude. I'm going to go in and I'm going to wax him. And like, I'm stoved up like in a ball.
Yep. That was my exact thoughts. I was like, please, please give it to me so I can go hunt for a week. But no, I was in my recliner all day.
Yeah. And so I ended up getting one hunt in and I adjusted some. I knew I didn't want to be in that spot and I put a hunt in on him pretty close to there. And it was one of the places I found one of his rubs. And while I was hunting on the private that can be hunted, I heard four consecutive shots. The first thing that rang off my head, he's chasing and they're shooting at him. That was just like, you know how your mind goes. I was like, there he is. Like, God, like I can't do anything about it. But I never heard a percussion off of any of the shots. So I was like, maybe they didn't kill him. So I kind of hold back and I stay at home for a little while and try to take care of things at home, especially because, I mean, I still moved on the weekends and was mobile, but I just was not. I couldn't hit a lick on anything. I really think it was like that deer just had me so zoned in on him, like I couldn't even just make a right decision. Well, January 5th, I was sitting at home, dude. My baby had been up all night crying. A camera that he had only shown up on at night, basically that route that he was hitting like once every 2 weeks in the middle of the night, he daylights in with a doe. And we're talking about, this is pretty late for what our rut is right there. It's generally like, you're talking about December 14th to January 5th, like spread out. So like when I saw that deer with the doe, I was like, all right, he's alive. But, and I knew right then, I was like, I would have never made the decision to go hunt him right there just based off cameras. I mean, I may have if I were running cameras because the spot's beautiful, but I knew right then he just got a free pass and I got a daylight picture. So I was thinking, I started in my mind pre-planning. I was like, if this deer will breed this, maybe this is the last one because we're getting late now. So if this is the last one, maybe he will pop up somewhere consistent on one of the beds and go back into trying to regain weight. And if he does that, if he will give me a tail, I'll go in and kill him. And I just don't say anything to anybody. Like, I completely just kept it mouth shut. Like, I was like, I don't even want anybody to know. Because by this time, this area that I'm hunting, you might have one person come out and hunt it, but it's pretty much a wasteland. All the does have kind of moved to other areas, and there's no bucks moving on does. So I wasn't worried about pressure. And that was one of the things I think that helped me was everybody cleared out and it let him settle down. So the next day, he shows up in his summer bedding spot and he just walks by the camera at like 5 PM. And I was like, okay. And it's funny, whenever I found that spot and I hung that camera originally, when I went in and looked at it, one of my buddies I talked to about it, I said, I promise you I will kill this deer right here. I promise you I will kill him right there. Well, the next day, he daylights again in the afternoon right there. And I was just like, man, like at this point, everything's starting to click. I'm like, my chances are rising. And this was like a Thursday or a Wednesday and I was at work. So I was like, okay, I mean, that's fine. I was way more relaxed at this point because I thought I'd already lost this deer for the year. I think he didn't show up Thursday. And then like Friday, he like left at like 12 and came back at 3, middle of the day. So, and when he did that, I was like, I'm 100% on the bed he's using. Like, I know it. The only way I'm going to catch a public land deer like this, traveling this area in this way twice in one day in daylight, is I'm right on top of him. So that gave me a big confidence boost. So I was thinking then, I was like, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and I'm going to move and I'm going to catch him coming out of bed. Well, lo and behold, I don't know how many people have children, but my daughter had other plans. She raised mortal hell all night, and I barely got any sleep. I ended up sleeping from like 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. And my wife had already told me, she was like, a couple of my friends are going to come over, we're going to go to Target and, you know, just go out in town. Like, I'm going to take the kid with us and yada yada. I was like, okay, cool, I'll get some rest. Well, at 12 p.m., he leaves his bed. And it's not a great picture. Now, on this camera, there had been nothing but hogs. We're talking about over 5 months, 4 months. There had been nothing but hogs, one or two does, and this buck. That's it. No other bucks, nothing. So when I seen like just the body style, his head was behind a pine tree. I was like, that's him. I started comparing pictures, looking at like the base of the neck. I was looking at how much white he had on his tail. Like I was like really trying to like, is this him? And I just finally made the decision. I was like, well, dude, I'm pretty sure it's him. I got to go. And I looked at my wife and said, I got to go. Well, to tell you how little I was hunting, 2 weeks before that, I went and shot a hog, and I actually waded through like knee deep water at like 19 degrees and like got home miserable for like, and I was like 2 miles in. Like I wasn't even supposed to be trying to kill a hog, and they just struck up. Well, I never washed those clothes. So like I go to put everything on and it's wet. And so I throw everything on the dryer like as high as I can. And her friends, like I think they could kind of tell like I was like in the zone. They're like, are you not going to come with us? I was like, I cannot explain it. I do not really want to go. Like I'm almost over deer season, but I have to go. It's something in me. Like I have to do it. So I grab everything. Once it gets dry, I drive out. Obviously there's nobody there. And I get all my stuff out, dude. I don't even remember the walk in straight up. I don't remember anything. I remember getting to the spot. After about 45 minutes of walking, I had never actually sat in it. The camera was there. So I actually had to take 20 minutes and look and kind of look at, I knew where he would be coming from. He was going to be coming from the west. So I was like, man, you know, he's going to be below me, has a good chance of skylining me. So I ended up getting in like a triple tree and setting myself up. Well, I'm there and I'm talking to one of my buddies, but I was like, yeah, I made a move on him. This is it. I've given it my all. You know, I might give him one more tomorrow, but you know I'm completely satisfied with the amount of effort that I have put in this year. You know, like my work tank internally is like, yeah, you've worked your ass off. So it wasn't like 10 minutes after that I hear him moving, but it's quick. He is jogging. He comes up out of a drainage. And he is actually on the private. He's probably about, 200 yards. I was in a sliver of public between the cutover and the private. That's how, little he was just using in that area. So first thing I'm thinking is, it's going to be hard, but I have to let this deer cross the line, which is miserable. I'll go ahead and tell you right now, like miserable feeling, like you don't know if he's going to take a turn and dive back off into another drainage, anything. But I like mentally checked my wind. I knew everything was good. So, like, I immediately reached around, snatched my gun. I forgot to bring a hanger. I literally clipped my gun to my wolf pack. Like, so I had to, like, unclip it and bring it around. And I'm sitting down. Well, as that happens, he's probably, like, 60 yards from the public line. Well, I thought he saw me. And the only thing I can really remember seeing is I mentally checked off, like, yellow rack big G2s. That's him. That's 100% him. Well, he was jogging. He stopped. I thought he saw me. He throws his nose up and just gives like, we're talking about a half a second wind check, and immediately like slams his head down and starts jogging again. And I was like, holy shit, like this deer does not like being exposed. Like the first thing I could tell by his body language, like this deer knows he is messing up right now. So I put my gun up and I find the road between the cutover, which is everything's totally public right there. He breaks the wood line and he was quartering to me. So he was going to pass me heading into the bed at about 25 yards. So as soon as he broke the line, dude, I shot him like front of the neck, blew the shoulder out. I'd imagine clipped one lung and blew the other lung out. He just flopped. And I was just, I wasn't excited. Like I wasn't like, hell yeah, dude. Like I killed this dude. Kind of like, this is the craziest moment that I actually pulled this off in this way. Like, I just didn't know how to feel. And I got it almost so much so that he was laying there and he was kind of in a gully. And I was like, man, a deer of this caliber, I should really be able to see his rack. And did I just shoot like a 3-year-old and like jump the gun? which I would have been cool with, but I was like, man, I really just think it's him. So I'm trying to get out of the tree. My aider falls off my foot. Like, dude, I'm shaking. So I'm like having to monkey myself down my stick. And like, I get over and I see him. And I just like, I just sat there, dude. I didn't even call anybody. I just sat there for a minute, just looking at him, like mentally going through all of the pictures. And I was just like, this is one of the craziest things I'll ever do. To do something like this in Alabama, in my mind, me personally, the way that it worked out, I could see how some people would be like, you know, that's pushing it. But if, in all honesty, I do not think that deer would have died by Hunter without those cameras. He just moved too smart.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where your story to me is not a, it's not a, well, you know, I just got lucky in being in the right place at the right time. You know, there is definitely a chess match that's in there within those cameras, for sure.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like you said, Parker, I use trail cameras a pretty good bit, and I could dive into 100 different wormholes to talk about cameras and your strategy behind it. And I know you, Jordan, you said you started really early in the season kind of putting out cameras and trying to locate this deer, and you were successful in that. I've tried that. I have not been successful in that. Just, I don't know. But one thing that stood out to me is you said you put a couple cameras over some beds that you thought were his. How did you kind of put those cameras on those beds to where he wasn't alerted by, you know, the infrared or the trigger sound, really?
All right, so there was a eureka moment at some point. So I had like two cameras up, three cameras up. And in the areas I was getting the deer, I was like going through maps one night, and I realized in this cut, there's a road that you can't get to as a human. There is like a wide open trail that you can't get to. And like it had never clicked to me like, this deer is running this road like wide open during the middle of the day. Like if he is moving, that's where he's moving. So once that snapped, because there would be little branches of road, old road, that would like peter off and turn into cutover. And then it would be like a 300 yard gap to where you could get to anywhere huntable to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he was showing up, and it clicked. I was like, dude, he is running this road and he's getting a free pass. I mean, there's no tree you can get in there and climb. You cannot walk through it without blowing him out. Like, he had it destroyed as far as like this deer had just been living. I mean, living free. So I noticed one of them was the biggest, like, kind of, you know, it was a pretty good opening, and it ran all the way to the wood line. And that's what led me to like right there, pretty close to that private, and hung that cam. And I knew, I just, everything just kind of lined up. I was like, man, any kind of pressure he would get, he should be able to hear or see anything that comes up here. But if he doesn't, it's such a tight spot. Not many people are going to risk it, you know, just knowing how close you are to private anyway. And then, you know, not knowing that there's a good deer in there, like they're going to pull it up on Onyx. On Onyx, it literally looks like the line. But once you get in there, you actually have like a 60-yard play.
Mm-hmm.
So it just made sense to me. And how I hung the cameras, and I've been doing this for a while, I'll just take a stick in with me and my lineman's, and I'll climb up, and I just buy those little screw-in that attach to the bottom, and I'll bend them back.
Okay.
And I didn't have them on video or anything, but not once did any deer kind of, you know, we're talking 12 foot high. I mean, I'm sure they might have heard a click, but they were just like, squirrel.
Well, where are they going to look at that point? Okay, well, sweet. And what kind of cameras are you using, like, as far as your cell camera setups?
I use the Tacticam Reveals, and the reason being is, like, and I tell, like, my buddies this, like, pictures of deer are cool. Killing a deer is a lot cooler. I don't really care, like, what the quality is. Like, they're decent enough quality that I can go, oh, that's him. And that's all I need to know.
Right.
So that's where, like, I come in on that.
Okay. Yeah. I use the, these aren't cell cameras, but I use the Tascos, and that, you know, they're like the $25 and you can just barely make out the image of a deer, but that's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I had three regular Tascos in there.
Yeah.
I want to know.
I like using those.
I want to know. So you were hanging it you said you had like five different cameras, and I want to know how you kind of broke down. Like, this is where I always struggle with trail cameras, especially with a specific deer like this, you know. Like, I've gotten big, like, so I have some trail cameras. I don't have any cell cameras, but I've got some trail cameras, just regular ones. Like maybe five or six of them. And I don't ever use them. Like, they literally just are sitting in a box because I don't ever use them. I get them for Christmas like every year, and I don't ever put them out. Because I feel like, I can tell you a general area of where I could go in and potentially get a shot at a deer, but it being able to pinpoint it to one like tiny 20-foot spot is a different story. And so I feel like it's going to be a waste of time. I want to know how you were precise and where you were putting them at.
Man, and it's kind of crazy. I think that area specifically, you know, once I realized he was running that road, that was his tail. It told me everything I needed to know. And I didn't know for 100%, but in my mind I did. I was like, that's it. Like, I know he's doing that. So when I shifted those cameras that last time, it was just like domino effect. Boom, boom. He's coming out. He's exiting. So like in a very large open block of woods, what I did, I would have struggled a lot more with. But like in the beginning, before I made that assumption, I did not apply any knowledge that I had previously gained. I told myself, I'm going to let the deer tell on itself. So I took the direction that he was coming from, and dude, I would just find drainages that I thought that he would drop at some point. And I was trying to work my way closer to where I thought he was bedding, which ended up being right, but he was actually turning a corner in there. So I was headed the right direction, and I think I still probably would have killed him without coming to the conclusion he was running that road, but it would have been way further down because that's where he ended up. He ended up coming from anyway. He was running this one finger really hard, and it's full on public right on the corner of that private. So he could drop in this drainage, get up on top of this ridge, drop back into that finger and get to the other private. And it's so deep that nobody's going to hunt it.
What I find interesting is that this buck, which was, did you say he was 8.5?
He was, so originally when I pulled up with him, I kept him overnight. There were two biologists there, and obviously, I mean, you know, I can't really say what I'm about to say, but sure. He had to get checked.
Yeah.
And they opened his jaw, and they said 6.5. Well, I was like, I want y'all to look at this. So I pulled up pictures from 2019, and, like, I'm sure you've seen the picture of Tank Body. Mm-hmm. Like, the deer in 2020 had a split G2. He was about 155, 160-inch deer. So he was smaller this year. I know most deer peak at around 7. He looked like he was 5 or 6 in 2019. So once they saw the pictures and I explained everything out to them, they were like, dude, that teeth are not always accurate, and that deer is absolutely over 7.
Hmm. That's interesting. So what I think is interesting about this is that it seemed like the deer had some very repeatable actions, and depending on which part of the season it is. And typically down here in the South, you don't find that with most bucks. They'll, just because there's so many good bedding opportunities for them, you know, one ridge, you know, 300, 400 yards away is going to be just as good as the other one. So if he just happens to find himself over there, a lot of bucks are not going to use the same beds over and over and over and over again. But it sounds like in different phases of the season, he would shift his bed based on, you know, what was popular. But I think it's interesting, though, when you said January or something like that. It was later, closer to when you killed him, that he was back in the bed that he was in the early season. So he went back to a more steady thing based on probably food. I mean, he probably went back to where spends all spring and summer at, because that's where the consistent food source is. And in between, it was like, man, like you might be able to get an idea of the area he's using based on a doe, but that doe is going to dictate where he goes. You're not going to get those repeatable things. And so, correct. You know, I think where what interests me here is the use of a cell camera during those two times of the season, early season and late season, because those are, like you said something really good a while ago. You said, you know, the place kind of becomes a barren wasteland. People are not killing deer out there this time of the season. There's not a lot of people out there hunting because the bucks simply aren't moving a whole lot. But and it's the same thing in the early season too, at least where I hunt, in a lot of the big woods type areas in the South where there's not a ton of ag, you get that, you know, it seems like the deer just kind of crawl in a hole and hibernate all early season, all bow season and then late season. And you have like a month window when you can potentially kill one. But cell cameras make it possible to keep up with these repeatable patterns. If you have them in the right spot, you know, you can,
yeah.
Because you don't have the ability or the luxury of being able to put a corn pile out there and attract deer in the late season.
Yes.
The cell camera seems to be kind of the way that people are consistent.
And it almost, to me, and obviously this is my first time doing this, but it opened my eyes to a lot of things. What it said to me was that I think now that these really large, mature bucks are moving more than we think they are, but it is a very defined, I mean, we're talking about a path that they are absolutely confident in. And I think that's what hurt him. I think I had the camera in the right spot, and he was confident. He'd probably been there for, you know, 6 years doing the same thing and, like, never saw a person. When my buddy got back there, he was like, man, that's why this deer was here. He was like, who the hell's going to come hunt this? Like, you're so deep, and it's such a, just a little sliver. Like, dude, he had a free ride. So it makes me wonder, you know, obviously I'm going to try to repeat this again. But it makes me wonder, you know, how many do the same thing? Is it almost every big deer or even just mature buck in general that they know to the point that they can define a path and they know they have an escape route to the point that they know that they can walk open daylight through certain slivers and get away with it?
And it's even like you said earlier, you bumped him, but he was confident enough in that space. He either left, you know, for a couple of days, but he was right back in there because he had confidence in where he lived and how he did things.
This is my thought on that. And I've thought this over and over again since it happened. In my mind, a lot of people are so nervous to go in and bump a good deer. But in my mind, maybe a deer thinks that when you bump him, got him, that's exactly why I'm here. And I need to stay here.
That's right. They've got to think about it. And you also think about the pressure from the guy at the beginning. Like you said, you had him on camera. He's in there every day hunting. You know, how was he educating that deer? How was that affecting it? And there's a lot of things that come into there. But another question I have for you, Jordan, I know you said in that pine thicket there was some hogs, that big buck, and a couple does. How were your other cameras kind of translating as far as deer activity? Were there more younger bucks, does? What were they kind of doing?
Okay, so this is where it gets like also super interesting. I can give you an exact. I pulled out the area of what I was able to actually hunt, not including the private that he was fully using. And it was a 600-acre span. So at one point during the season, he was using a full 600 acres. On the cameras I got does on, there was like six does in that area. There was a group of four and a group of two really mature does. That's it for does. But the second week in December when pre-rut hit, on one camera that come through a good thermal bottom, like on a creek crossing, I got like 40 pictures of different bucks running that same lane. Which obviously, like next year, I'm like, dude, I know where to be as long as I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, staying there.
The story, you know. And one of them was like a mega. Like we're talking about 140-inch 8-point, and I only have one picture of him. I mean, it was just an off deer, but so many deer use that. And I was actually meant to hunt that spot, but it wasn't open for gun. And a lot of those pictures happened on a bow weekend in that area when nobody was traveling the roads on that side, which is also interesting to me. So it kind of clicked for me this year, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't be trying to get in an area with a gun just to kill a deer. Maybe I should go where I know I need to be.
Well, I'm wondering, when I see your trail camera pictures of this buck that you shared on your Instagram, and then hearing you talk about it, it sounds like you didn't kill him on a creek crossing. It sounds like you killed him in a more awkward, maybe, type, like, not like you look at it and think, there's going to be deer here, but you could look at it and say, this is just right for a big, giant, mature deer.
Yes. Big knob, high ridge, dumping into a cut. And it's like almost like until he's right there, you're not going to see him.
And you're probably not going to see a lot of other deer, right?
No. That was the exact thoughts going into the area. And I tell a lot of people that ask me questions this often, because I've walked so much and seen so much now, I hunt nowhere near sign. I literally, like, when I see sign, I almost don't even pay attention to it, because I think our deer are so smart, or a deer is so smart, and I may give them too much credit, that do you think that a coyote isn't smart enough to camp a scrape? You know what I mean? So why would he do it when he has all of this area that he can hide in? Why would he not, you know, just like that pattern people, they probably pattern predators. So my thoughts on that are, you know, a deer may be smart enough to know that where he's leaving his signs are probably nighttime travel routes, because these places that I've killed good deer, there's none. There's none.
Same. I have the same experience. I don't see a lot of really good deer where there's a ton of sign. It's usually something else. It's usually some type of terrain, vegetation, something like that, which points me to it. Sometimes there's sign around it, you know. Sometimes I might go in blind and not even know there's sign around it. But I remember talking to Nathan Killen two summers ago about hunting mountain bucks. And he kind of explained something. And this is one of those, like, things that he kind of probably just breezed over, but it was so big in my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the whole point of this podcast. He was like, big, giant, mature bucks aren't going to be, they're not going to be in all the big sign on the acorn flat of the ridge, where you got 2.5 year old bucks making scrapes and, you know, throwing down all this big sign. The big buck, they're not going to be far, because they're not going to be a long ways from the general population of deer, but they're going to be off of it. They're going to be off of those trails. So thinking about your situation, it just very much seemed like it was an awkward spot, you know, to set up, but not only that, to set up a trail camera. Like,
yes,
like it seemed like a weird spot. So when you talk about precision trail camera placement for big bucks, for mature deer, what about that specific spot said that specific awkward, weird, not going to get a lot of deer on it spot? What about that, like, made you put it right there?
The trail going into the cut.
So that it was, so that road that you're talking about, or that cut trail.
With the way that it opened up compared to every other trail around that cut that I knew he was living in, it was a highway. I mean, a human would still struggle to get in there without blowing a deer out, but comparatively, it was his easiest access point. And for a deer that is probably avoiding pressure very well for how he moves through the area, he's probably thinking, boom, I can get in there easy out, make no noise, you know, and I'm getting right into an area, you know, where I know where these people are hunting. They're probably hunting greenfields. And it's funny, like, I actually touched base with the guy that hunted the private. And I sent him a picture of the deer. I said, do you have this deer on camera? I was obsessed at this point. Like, I had to know, like, what he was doing. And he straight up told me, he was like, yeah, I got him on scrape at night. And this was the first year he hunted it. And I ended up talking to him, dude. And we sat down and looked at my Onyx, and he was pretty much like, dude, the amount of homework you've done on this deer, like, you deserve to kill him, pretty much. And, you know, I wanted to show him, like, especially because I'm bouncing around his line, you know, I wanted to show him my Onyx as well, just so he knew, like, I'm not going to trespass on you. I'm not going to shoot this deer across the line because I've got to win the war anyway. I have to get him to make the mistake legally.
Yeah.
And we ended up talking about it a lot, and I called him right after I killed the deer. And I was actually, I was so deep. I was like, hey man, like, can you bring a razor up here? So, and he was stoked. He was on his way to the hospital with stomach virus. And he was like, dude, awesome. Like, I knew you were going to kill him. And he asked me where I was, and I told him, and he was like, look, dude, like, we need to go walk the property during turkey season. Like, we gained a good relationship out of it. And I'm not encouraging people to do that, because there was also a guy who had seen my truck parked there on the public that owned a piece by it. And he had told that guy, the guy ended up telling me, he said, man, he's walking his property every day, like trying to catch you trespassing or something. I said, well, he can walk it every day. I mean, I'm not doing anything illegal, you know? So, but that just tells you, you can get two totally different interactions depending on the person's personality.
Yeah. Yeah. And thinking about going into that kind of precision stuff, I think the part where I would probably get thrown off, maybe Matthew too, I don't know, you might do the same thing, but is the shift. It sounds like you cast a wide net at the beginning, and then you start shifting and moving and going closer and closer and closer to where that becomes a part of, I mean, that's the precision, right? That's the, okay, we're getting into killing time. I need to know exactly where he is. And so you're just kind of casting that wide net and then going closer and closer and closer. And I think that's for a lot of people, they'll leave the same trail camera up on the same tree. And if they move that trail camera, it's because they're moving it to a completely different area, you know,
correct,
5 miles down the road, because they want to check out another area. And they're not using it to focus in on one spot and to break down one spot. But what it sounds like it happened for you, maybe I'm wrong, but it sounds like what happened is you cast that wide net and you gained some intel for other deer and other potential, correct, potential spots, because you cast that wide net. And while you were hunting a specific deer, you were in the process, you gained some intel. Matt, go ahead, Jordan.
Real quick, like, to the point of, just to kind of tell you, like, there is also a very large deer used in this area, but it's almost like two opposite ends of the 600 acres. Like, one's leaning more towards one private, the other's leaning more towards the other private. And like, I didn't have a lot of time to invest in that deer. He's also three, and I think he's going to be a giant next year. He's already like 22 inches wide, but it told me, from what I know now, like, I've gotten one daylight picture of him and one right at daylight, and then like three nighttime pictures. So now I immediately know, like, I'm nowhere close to killing that deer. I've got to figure out where his core is and start adjusting as soon as I get the chance to get closer.
You did that a little bit, Matt, this year, kind of, in that you took one area and really tried to break down. Like I think about 600 acres. When I was a 16-year-old kid, you give me daggum 600 acres to work with, that's a ranch, man. Like, that's, yeah, a lot of forever, land.
You know.
Yeah, you could all, that's your family property, you know. That's not a small piece of land. So you're learning that, even though you were just hunting that one deer. Matt, you kind of did the same thing this year.
I had a deer from last year that I knew was there, was in the area, and he showed up every year, like right in mid-November, did the same thing this year. And I just said, hey, I'm going to deploy cameras, figure out where he is. And, you know, I had a cell camera and I had some other non-cell cameras that I just let soak. They're still out there. I've got to go back and check them. But I kind of, I honed in where the deer was, never got to his core area. I knew kind of his travel route, where he was cruising and kind of how he was working, but he ended up getting killed 2 miles from where I had him on camera, and where I thought I could actually kill him. So, you know, as much work as you can put in with these trail cameras, these deer can change overnight. They can go 5 miles in a day and be gone. It's just staying on top of them, like you did, Jordan, finding that area where he's comfortable and staying there in him. So I'm actually going to try to do more of what you've talked about, Jordan, for this next year, and ready to try that out.
I've got to encourage you on that. Sorry, I'm not trying to. I got to say it while it's on my mind.
No, you're fine.
I wish I could pull up like maps and kind of show you. A guy actually sent me some of the missing pictures of where he went missing, and to the point that I had a track and I showed it to him where I had walked in there and started to hang a camera because I was pretty sure that's where he was. He was on the other side of those private bumping into public. Now, he was only doing it at night. He was staying on that private that couldn't be hunted. But he, in my mind, deer pre-plan, when you're getting into pre-rut, like in leading up to pre-rut before testosterone peaks and does go in, I think those deer already have certain pockets of does they're going to go to.
Yes.
So whenever that happened, it just kind of verified. And like, you know, you're looking at a block of woods, you're like, man, this deer could be anywhere. But I really, as the crow flies, we're talking about 2 miles, but as like boots on the ground and area to hunt, the way I look at it now after this, the deer wasn't far. He wasn't far at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I mean,
crazy.
You think about one creek bottom. I mean, we could go out right now and hike a creek bottom and go 2 miles in 30 minutes. You know what I mean?
It was literally ridges over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a simple way to put it.
It's not far, especially for a deer that's in better shape than I am. You know what I mean? Like,
they're moving, especially if they're cruising.
Yeah. Yeah. When they got that good on the mind, dude, there's a lot. I'd walk a long ways. You know what I mean? Like,
two years ago, I had a deer who, I think it was right at 3 miles that he would travel every year. I had a buddy, he would summer on his property, stay there, hang out, and then right at Christmas, 2 years in a row, within 2 days, he was over at my place chasing does till February. And then he would go back over there, summer, come back the next year, and then he ended up getting shot. But it's just crazy what these deer do and how, like you said, how quick they can move, and 2 miles is nothing to them. But we can, you know, we think about walking it and we're getting winded already.
Yeah. So I got one more question for you, Jordan, and we'll let you get some sleep because you got to wake up and go to work and then go to school and then take care of your newborn. You got a busy life ahead of you. I would say a busy day ahead of you. You got a busy life ahead of you.
Yes.
So in your beginning phases, I want to leave listeners with this so anybody could potentially, you know, try to replicate it. In your first setup of trail cameras, you're putting them out there. Are you putting, I know a lot of guys put all their eggs in the scrape basket, so they're going to go out early season, try to find a community scrape close to bedding and do that. Then a lot of people are doing creek crossings, which is places where they find heavy trails with lots of tracks in it. And then some guys are doing terrain features, you know, like what's your advice for that at the beginning phases of your trail cameras?
My take on it is, from what I've learned from trail cameras, is that in that early season, especially in velvet and leading into it, if a deer's going to move and you're probably going to get a picture of him, he's going to do it similar to that he would in pre-rut based on the picture sets that I have. So where I put the cameras originally were terrain-based. I mean, I knew that it was a winning combo for thermals where he was, and if a big buck in that area was going to move somewhere, he would have to move there if he was going to do it in daylight, especially so that he could have the upper hand. Like a scrape's cool, but it might be a one-off scrape. A rub's cool. A creek crossing is cool, but he may not use that all the time. But a deer is always going to do what's best in his interest as far as using that wind and scent. So I feel like if you have, you know, in a 500, 600 acre area, a super high point, and you can find a hub in it or some kind of thermal winning situation, he's going to show himself.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because, I mean, realistically, in that phase, you know, in August or whatever, you don't really care whether it's daylight or nighttime. Yeah, you know what I mean? You just want to know that the deer's there. That's at least my take on it. That would be what I would be trying to do. I would be trying to buy opening day of bow season of archery. So for here, it's beginning of October. I would like to know, I would like to be zoned in at least on his core area for that point. And then you got to shift again because everything's going to change three more times before the season's over. So you got to shift and try to find him again. So I think that's pretty sweet. That's a good way to end it, for give people those kind of just how to get started with it, with this precision and really zoning in on one deer, both one deer and one area, you know, breaking down a full area using trail cameras. And so, Matt, do you have anything else for Jordan before we go?
I think that really covers it. I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about turkey season, man. Jordan, I know. you're getting fired up. Dude, so first turkey season with a baby, that's going to be fun for you.
Yeah, first question my wife asked after I killed that deer, she said, "So when's turkey season?"
Yeah. it's going to happen forever now. Like, they're always going to be like, "So when is that next season that you're going to be gone all the time?" Yeah, but I think all three of us were blessed in that regard, with wives who get it. And they may not get it, but they at least try to get it.
And they put up with it.
Yeah, they put up with it.
Man, one thing that I'd like to include, like, a lot of people know me around here, and I have a very headstrong personality. But to get in a situation with a deer like this, and for it to pan out, and to go through so many ups and downs in a season, it's nothing short of humbling.
Yeah, man. I mean, when you realize, like what you've said so many times, like, I was done. I was pretty well just beat. He beat me. He was smarter than I am. He beat me. You were able to kill him, but man, the things that, even if you didn't kill him, the things that you learned about how smart an 8.5-year-old buck is, like, that's
incredible.
That's worth it. You know, I mean, you got an experience that I know very few people that have killed 8.5-year-old deer.
In Alabama.
Yeah, in Alabama, in a place where, I mean, there's very, I hunted, just for an example, as an example to you, I hunted in Mississippi, right across the state line of Alabama. Right across the state line. There were trucks everywhere. I passed public land in Alabama. There were trucks all over the place. I get to Mississippi, nobody there. Not a soul there. The hunting pressure here is just, I don't know what it is. There's just a lot of it. And it's hard to find a big buck like that. But they are there. They're there. I mean, and I think utilizing some of these tactics would show people, you know, if you learn this aspect, and it is very much a learning game, because you can't just go hang a trail camera over any tree, you know, whatever. You've still got to understand how deer are using the area. But it can really, really help you in understanding the quality. I think that's more than anything, in just a transparent way, I'll say this. That's why I want to use trail cameras, is just to know the type of deer. You know, I shoot plenty of decent bucks, you know, bucks that are, and I've killed some that are good bucks, like really nice bucks, but I think knowing the caliber of deer that are in an area kind of forces you to lay off a little bit, you know, and it encourages you to really see what you can really do. So, anyways.
For me, going into all this, when I first started doing this on public land several years ago, I gave myself a 5-year plan. I'm a very methodical person in the way that I do things. I like to have a system and a plan. I gave myself 5 years to kill a good public land deer. We're talking like 120 plus. It just so happened I bow hunted the first year, saw a mega. The second year I was able to get it done. So I was pushing myself to elevate myself as a hunter. And I think it was just that want to go, to push myself to grow, not to settle, you know. There's a lot of days you walk in the woods and you're like, man, I might take it easy today. And I would get in a conversation with myself and be like, dude, you're a slacker. Like, you're going to man up. It doesn't matter if you have to wake up at 3 a.m. the next day. You're here now, and you're going to man up. So, and it's just that drive to grow. I want to grow in all things that I do. And I feel like if people will adopt that and go, even putting out trail cameras, like talking about a starting point, when I go back and look at it, the best place to kill them was the hardest place to get to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that into consideration as well.
Yeah.
Don't slack. Just go ahead and go.
Jordan Pope, everybody. I mean, that was, I feel like I just listened to David Goggins give a motivational speech right there.
I'm hard on myself.
You got to get hard. You got to want it.
I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm waking up at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm gonna get up. I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be ready. If a deer runs into my backyard at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll be there.
Pow, he gone.
He dead. Not really. Dude, I feel against the law.
I ask myself a lot, how bad do you want it?
Yeah. Yep, you got to. Man, Jordan, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks for talking about all this. I'm sure we'll hear from you during turkey season. We're going to have to.
I hope so. I can't be disappointed if I can kill one bird this year, I'm more than satisfied.
That sounds like me every year. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. As always, a big shout out to all of our partners. That's Go Wild, Spartan Forge, Tethered, New Canoe, and Scree Gear. You can keep up with Southern Ground Hunting by following us on Facebook and Instagram, or you can subscribe to us on the YouTube channel. And make sure you check out southerngroundhunting.com to pick up some of our merch, hats, t-shirts, stickers, stuff like that. I truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you here again next week. Remember this, God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth, so go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.